Hi, I'm Johanna Ferreira, content director of Pop Sugar Juntos. Juntos is all about celebrating Latinx culture, pride, our many intersectional identities, and joy. Thanks to support from Prime, there's so much to get into over at Juntos this month. From conversations with the Latinx minds behind our favorite new movies and resurrected TV shows, to thoughtful celebrity commentary and exclusive interviews with some of the biggest Latin music artists today. And it doesn't stop there. Get more of the music, movies, and shopping you love on Prime. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more of whatever you're into from streaming to shopping. And get all of our latest coverage at popsugar.com/juntos. Con amor, Johanna.
Welcome to In Her Shoes. I'm Lindsay Peoples-Wagner, editor-in-chief of The Cut. On this podcast, we talk to ambitious women about how they've come this far and where they're going next. Cynthia Erivo is an English actor, singer, and songwriter. She is not just a two-time Oscar nominee, but a Grammy, Daytime Emmy, and Tony Award-winning performer. She's known for playing legendary women like Harriet Tubman in the first feature film about the heroine's life, and Aretha Franklin for National Geographic's Genius series. And on top of that, she's recently released her debut solo album, Chapter 1, Verse 1. We spoke about Cynthia's track record of playing iconic Black women, what it's like to be so close to an EGOT, the inspiration behind her new children's book, and more. I'm so excited for you all to listen. Hi, Cynthia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Lindsay, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
All right. So let's start with The Color Purple because I love talking to you about this. And I wanted to talk to you more about this at our dinner. I was there and just in such awe of you and was like, who is this person? Why can she blow like we're in church? This is crazy. And you won a Tony, which obviously I would have been, everyone would have been so upset if you didn't. How did that change your life? You know, being cast as Celie, just being in The Color Purple, which is such a big deal to us as a community. It's such a point in time for us. And I think a cultural statement of so many things that have happened in the Black community.
Yeah, that show was sort of like my reason for being at that time. I first did it in the UK. And when I did it in the UK, I just fought for it. I just was like, this is the show that I want to do. I don't know why I knew that it was the show that was supposed to be doing. It just was like, it was like pulling at me. I really wanted this to be part of the story that I was telling for myself. And so I just fought for it. They wouldn't see me for a little bit. And then they changed their mind and let me come in and audition. I had no idea that it was going to become what it became. I had no idea that we were going to end up doing this as a musical on Broadway. I had just no idea about all of the things that came from it. And so when we got to Broadway, I was already sort of like blown away by how big this had become. And that was sort of like enough for me. Because I like at no point did I think, well, I'm going to be on Broadway and this is going to happen. I'm going to do this show. I really love it's going to happen. It was like one step further than I had imagined for myself, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. And so when I get there and it felt like everybody's arms were wide open and people were ready to just be there, go on this journey with this young woman who is going through some of the most awful things and actually experiencing joy as well, experiencing love properly for the first time, experiencing intimacy for the first time in the way that she's supposed to experience it. It was just sort of, it was a real honor to be able to be part of that storytelling. And then I don't know if it was just the Tony. I think the whole thing, the performance, the show, the Tony, the whole thing just changed my life. I don't know. There was sort of like laser focused eyeballs on this particular show and on me in it. That meant that I had the opportunity to sort of branch out and do film and do TV and do all of those things and meet people that I had never met before and meet some of my heroes and create family here. And it just was one of the most amazing moments in my life. I really do think that was like a turning point for me in my career, like a massive turning point that shifted me forward exponentially. Just and I didn't expect it. And when it came, I realized that I should probably buckle up and go with the flow and get ready for the ride. Yeah.
Those are the best ones, though, when you don't expect it and life just has a better plan for you than you thought. Like those are the best times, because then you're like, this is, I didn't even dream of this because I didn't even think it was possible, or I didn't even know that this was something that I really needed and that was going to change my life in such a big way.
Right, right. Because it didn't start there. You know, for me, it really started with like, I really want to do the show. And the show means a lot to me and I would love to just be a part of it. I really want to do it. And I just didn't know what this show, this story had in store for me at all. I just had no idea how big the scope of what the story was and how big the scope of this show was on my life. And I'm glad I fought for it.
No.
I'm glad I kept going for it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to also talk about Harriet Tubman. I feel like this is going to be talking about a lot of you playing extraordinary Black women and just taking everything to the next level, because Harriet movie obviously was, you know, the first time that her story had ever been adapted into a feature film, which I didn't even realize until I saw it. I was like, how has no one ever done this before? This is crazy.
Right.
So what was it like being tasked with being the first person to tell her story on such a big screen?
Daunting. And I readied myself in as many ways as possible, whether it be training or reading, learning, looking at pictures, learning about her, but like as much as I could possibly soak in about her, I did, because I knew it was a huge responsibility to tell that story. And it was important. It really did amaze me that it hadn't been done on the big screen before. And then we had the first film, which was starring Cicely Tyson, which is a TV movie, I think. And then we had a really beautiful version with Aisha Hines, who did it on Underground. It was like an episode or two of her trajectory, but it had never been done for the big screen. And I just knew that there was a special moment to be able to tell this woman's story as fully as possible. And it was tough, really tough to do it, because there's no glitz and glamour at all in telling this story and being out in the open air, in the field,
right,
in the middle of nowhere, at night, in the mud, in the water, in the grass, staying up the side of the mountain, all of those things. We did, but I think that they were completely necessary in order to tell the story in the right way.
Yeah. How do you feel about the conversations, you know, and I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer to this, but I'm curious because I think there aren't that many movies recently in the past couple of years like Harriet that talk about a lot of the, you know, emotions, whether it be obviously, you know, Harriet had some really high highs and also some really low lows, and specifically just moments in slavery. And how did you think about the conversation as far as, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, necessarily glorifying Black trauma, but also this is a really important story that needs to be told. And this story hadn't been told on the big screen.
Yeah, I think I totally understand that conversation, but the thing, my real purpose when it came to telling the story was more about the human being. It really was about Harriet, because yes, she did some incredible things, but I believe her story deserves to be told.
Yeah.
Her, the woman who had 91 years of life in her, who did many things in that 91 years, that story deserves to be told. And I understand that the pain and trauma that comes from the knowledge of the reasons why she had to do those things can sometimes be too much for people to watch, but our not telling it means that no one gets to learn.
Right.
And in the seeing her work and seeing what was sacrificed to get people to freedom, to make sure that women had the vote, because that's also what she was a part of, her being in the war, making sure that people were safe. There a lot of sacrifice went into her life. She had to do a lot in order to keep people safe. And when we erase that work, we don't do her justice, and we don't remind ourselves about what has gone into making sure that we have certain freedoms now. And it also doesn't allow us to think about the work that's gone before that we still have to do now. I know that there's pain tied to watching some of the harrowing things that she had to go through, but this is also before she is an abolitionist and a hero. This is a Black woman who had love and loss and wants and desires, and also deserves to be seen. And since she hadn't been seen for such a long time in the right way, I wouldn't have been doing my duty if I didn't tell the story as fully as I possibly could in my part. So I think some of these stories, yes, can be really tough to watch, but I do think they're important.
Absolutely.
I do think they're important. I think sometimes we forget that these people were existing, living human beings who also had lives that were bigger than the norm, and so deserve to be remembered and celebrated, especially when it's about specific individuals who shifted and changed the course of history. That deserves to be celebrated, I think.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think, I mean, even when you were just talking about it, I don't think that people in making that argument have ever sat down and thought about Harriet's own personal desires and dreams and goals for herself, because obviously there were so many more important things that needed to happen. Did you feel like with playing Harriet, that really set the stage and led you to wanting to take on Aretha as well, another big icon in a different direction?
I mean, no, because I had no idea that Aretha was coming. And before Aretha, I had done a little series called The Outsider, which felt really good to do. And it was very different. It's a non-existent character who is made up and fictional and all those things. Aretha sort of came out of the blue. I really wasn't expecting it at all. And the reason I did it is just because it's so weird. If you believe in signs, then this is definitely for you. There were so many different signs that were like, this is right. This is right. For you. You should be doing this. I remember when I went to sit down with Susan Laurie Parks, the writer, when we were sort of like in talks to maybe do it, because it came from, the message came to me from Clive Davis and Ron Howard at Imagine, that, and Brian Grazer, that they wanted me to consider doing it. They thought I would be right for it after they heard me sing a song of hers on a red carpet at the Tonys. I did not know that that tape had gone anywhere but that interview. And so that tape had gotten back to them. Then they had come to my team to ask if I would be interested. And I said, well, I'd love to sit and talk to the writer. I sat and talked to Susan Laurie Park. And when I sat down in this hotel, I think we were at the, Nomad, I think, in New York. The restaurant was sort of playing, hotel music. It's sort of like nondescript, no words, no lyrics, no artists, nothing. Sort of like easygoing.
Elevator music?
Yeah, like that. And then I sit down and Daydreaming comes on. Aretha's Daydreaming comes on. And it's sort of like nothing, no music. And all of a sudden it goes that weird sort of like chromatic scale that goes up to Daydreaming and I'm thinking of you. Daydreaming and I'm thinking. And I look at Susan Laurie Parks and I go, did you plan this?
Did you turn that on?
did you tell them to watch me sit down? And then she was like, no, I don't know why that's playing. It's not me. And so it's just like one after the other, a sign after the other. And I was just like, okay, this feels like it's right. And I just realized that it's another woman whose humanity we hadn't met yet. We know about Aretha the star. We know about Aretha the musician. We know about Aretha, the queen of soul. But we hadn't learned about the human being that made all of those other things possible. And I think that's what I'm interested in doing. I think I'm interested in telling stories of these women whose humanity and whose humanness gets kind of erased because of how bright their star shines, which makes us forget that It's because of their humanity and their humanness and who they are that their star shines bright. So meet the human being so you can understand how much work went into becoming the star, becoming the icon, you know? That's what I was interested in. That's what I wanted to do.
And what was it like with this role? Because obviously you're stepping into and, you know, playing, you know, another icon, but also just an iconic voice. And as a singer, I mean, having your own voice, but then also, you know, portraying Aretha, walk us through what that was like.
It was like having a masterclass every day. I would sit with my vocal coach because each episode maybe had about four songs in it, four or five songs. And so I was sort of well rehearsed up until like episode two when the songs changed. So I was getting songs every episode to learn. Mm-hmm. And I would sit with my vocal coach and we would go through each song with a fine tooth comb and just go through all of like the choices that she would make. Which riff is she doing here? How long is that breath being held? That's more than an eight. It's an irregular length. So we're just sort of like going to wait and be patient until it's time to come in again. And why is she doing that breath there? And how come she's pausing here, which is strange. And now this is different from the live performance that she did there. This is different from the recorded performance. Which performance are we going to choose? Are we choosing this one? How much of it? So that it became like music theory for me, which is actually thrilling because I'm a music geek and I love learning. But that's what I would spend when it wasn't being on set, working through scenes and making sure the rhythm of the scene felt right and making sure that the words felt like they were hers and making sure that I'm working with the hairstylist and the makeup artist, Corey and Terrell, who helped to create the looks. And we really try to mine everything for detail is essentially what we did.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to say something that I know is going to sound a little obnoxious, but I think we should definitely talk about it because you're one Oscar short of an EGOT. And I know that's it's a lot and I don't want to put pressure on you, but it's a big deal.
Yeah.
What does that feel like? I mean, I know it's not something that you probably wake up and think like, oh, I'm one short of this, but what goes through your head?
It's very overwhelming because I didn't expect it so soon. And so it still is like really weird. I move through the day without thinking about it. And then I'm reminded and it's sort of like so interesting. It's just, you know, because one, I didn't know that it was possible to get all those awards with a show. Essentially, that's what happened.
Right.
The Emmy, Grammy and Tony came from The Color Purple. Or aspects of The Color Purple. So the Grammy came from the album, the Tony came from the show, the Emmy came from a performance that I did on a morning show that came from the show. But that is also the morning I found out about the Tony nomination.
Oh,
so right. That performance that got me the Emmy is the same day I found out about the Tony.
Oh, wow.
Which is
insane.
All very metaphysical and strange and weird and insane and all of that stuff. So it always throw me. And like going through the Oscar process and being nominated was also really, really weird because it's like, this is like strange. But I hope that when it happens, I live up to that legacy because there are a lot of incredible people who have that title, people I look up to.
Is there any specific person that
Whoopi.
Yeah, I was just going to say Whoopi is my.
I mean, it's so crazy because I feel like you know, in a way, I'm sort of like following in her footsteps by accident. And there are, you know, I couldn't be prouder. And so, you know, I'm not looking for it. I'm not like trying to, that's not the aim. The aim is to try and tell really good stories. And if that comes of it, then wonderful. And if that comes of it, I hope that it only opens up the doors for me to tell more stories and create more space for other people. That is the goal, really and truly. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're rooting for you. Very excited.
Thank you.
let's talk about this album.
Yes.
Let's just start with the concept itself. Why now? You know, I know you've been working on music for a while, but just walk us through why you felt like now was the right time and what you're really trying to get across with this music.
Why now is simply because I was given the chance to do it. You know, getting a deal, being right for a record label takes time and work, and it takes convincing sometimes. It takes people to be convinced to see what your worth is. And that's
you had
what
to convince somebody? Who did you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've met with a good few labels who just couldn't see it. I've heard everything from, we don't know what to do with her voice because she can do a lot with it. So we don't know where
you can
to
do
place
too much.
being able to do too much was a problem. I've had labels put me in writing camps just to put me in writing camps to see if I could write, because they wanted to know I could write, even though there are definitely artists who don't write at all.
Yeah,
I've had absolutely. That, but they wanted to know that I could write. You know, it's very peculiar, and this particular label just sort of believed that I could do those things. They had seen me sing, they had heard me sing, they knew I could sing, and believed that I could write. And so that's sort of what happened. I ended up with a label that believed that I could do the job. And that meant that I had the space to create. And I had written a few songs before the album, before I started working specifically on the album. And those songs, some of those songs have made it onto this album. Songs I had written like 7 years ago have made it onto this album. And so the reason now is because I was given a chance. And the idea behind this particular album is just to sort of introduce people to who I am as a person. Outside of another character, outside of storytelling on screen, and so that people get to know me a little better, I guess, and hear some of the stories that I've experienced and some of the stories that they may also be able to connect with. And I think that this album really is about trying to connect people and trying to make people understand that we are all going through something, mm-hmm. that we are all connected by the things that we go through. And a lot of those things are similar. Yeah.
Did you have any influences when thinking about what you wanted your album, you know, to look like or sound like? I feel like you like a lot of old school music. Did you feel like you had a lot of influences there?
I think I did. I wasn't necessarily thinking of an influence to follow, but I have a really eclectic taste in music, and I think it's found its way into the album in that none of the songs are really exactly the same style. And the connective tissue is my voice. But that's just because that's how I've listened to music my entire life. Like, so many different artists have made it into the smorgasbord of musicians that I love listening to, whether it be Aretha or Annie Lennox or Brandy or Mary J or Gladys Knight and the Pips or Mike and the Mechanics or Aerosmith. There's always something. There's loads of different styles on that album that sort of lent themselves to the storytelling that I wanted to be a part of with each subject matter. Yeah.
I have no idea how you have the time, but you also released an amazing children's book. We talked about this briefly before. Remember to Dream, Hubert. So can you tell us about the book and what made you want to also, you know, make a children's book in the midst of all of these amazing things you're working on?
Remember to Dream, Hubert was sort of like an accident, because I really was resistant. I didn't want to write a kid's book when it was first offered to me. I was asked, do you want to write a kid's book? And I said, I waited for a little bit, thought about it, and I said, no. Because I just figured if I was going to do it, I wanted to do it myself. I wanted to do it properly. I wanted an idea to be fully formed. And I just was like, it wasn't coming. So I just thought, I'm going to leave it alone until it feels like it's right. And then one day, I think it was in New York, just like getting ready for a meeting that day, I was in the shower and this idea sort of like falls into my head. It sort of became really, really clear. And I'm sure that the idea was already there. It just sort of crystallized.
Right.
And it was sort of like the notion that people can dream very big dreams, but we're often afraid to dream of the detail within it. And I think I've spent my life doing that thing where I dream about something and I think about all the things that can make it whole. I think about the color of something, or if I want to do a film, I think about the kind of character that I want to play. I think about the people I want to work with, or all of those little details, you know, and that for me makes it more real. And so I wanted to write a story about that, that taught kids and anyone really to dream fully, dream with all the detail, dream with all the color in it, so that you can see it as bright as day. And that way there's a real like focus. You can see it. If you can see it truly, then you can believe it and you can probably make it happen. And that's what this book is about. Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
I can't believe that it's like done and ready and it's beautiful. And we have an amazing like illustrator who like took the time and came on really late and just like has done an amazing job. She's wonderful. So I'm excited. I'm really proud of it. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a sermon. I would listen to you talk about that for another hour. And I'm going to think about how I need to dream in more detail, because that is so true and so beautiful as well. Those are all of my questions, though. Do you have anything else we should talk about?
I mean, no, I feel like we covered it all, really. I'm really excited to be, and I haven't said this, I'm really excited to be alive right now. I'm excited to be in a position where I can create and tell stories and do work that I've always dreamed about doing, and maybe even create work for other people. That really is like the next frontier, being able to, I think this next year is going to be about doing things that are from me and that have me in the driver's seat, where I can help to make other people's dreams come true. So yeah, that's the next thing, I think.
That's always a dream for the Black girls. We have to be a ladder and pick each other up and help. And I love that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lindsay. You're amazing.
You're amazing. In Her Shoes is edited and produced by Camila Salazar. Our lead producer is Jasmine Aguilera, and Nishat Kerwat is our executive producer. The Cut is made possible by the excellent team at New York Magazine. Subscribe today to support their work at thecut.com/subscribe. I'm Lindsay Peoples-Wagner, and thank you for listening.